America's founding and religion is our topic during this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Mark David Hall, a professor of politics at George Fox University in Oregon. Dr. Hall has written a book entitled, Did America Have a Christian Founding? The subtitle says, Separating Modern Myth from Historical Truth. Chapters in the book deal with such things as the myth of the founder's deism, the U.S. does not have a godless constitution, and a chapter on Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, the First Amendment, and so forth. So we welcome Dr. Hall to the program. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Go ahead and give us an overview of your book, Did America Have a Christian Founding?
In the introductory chapter, I argue that it's very important to define our terms carefully, and I go through a couple of different possibilities of what we might mean by America having a Christian founding. Does that require that all of America's founders be Orthodox Christians or evangelicals, for instance? And I say, no, it doesn't. Does it require that the founders always acted in a Christ-like manner? And again, I say, no, it doesn't. I think for our purposes, the best way to understand America's founding is to ask whether or not the founders were influenced by Christian ideas or by ideas developed within the Christian tradition of political reflection. And I argue, if that's what we take a Christian founding to be, you can make an excellent, excellent argument that America had a Christian founding.
Now, I saw an article where you were quoted, or maybe it wasn't you, but someone else was quoted, and there was something along the lines of, well, some people think that the Constitution has nothing to do with Christianity, or that Christianity has nothing to do with the Constitution. And I think, wow, I read John Eisenman's book, Christianity and the Constitution, and he makes an argument basically showing a different conclusion.
Yeah, I think those claims are incredibly shallow. I'm thinking particularly of a book by Isaac Kramnik and R. Lawrence Moore called The Godless Constitution. And one of their points, of course, is that the deity really isn't referenced in the Constitution until you get to the dateline in the year of our Lord, 1787. But I think that's a really silly way to think about the question. Again, if we think in terms of influence, I think you can show a number of ways in which America's founders were profoundly influenced by Christian ideas when they were putting together the Constitution. Probably the most obvious and important one is they were convinced to a person that humans were sinful, right? All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And even Christians continued to struggle with the old man within. And so therefore they devised a system with separation of powers and checks and balances. They went in the exact opposite direction of the way Enlightenment political thought was going at this time. Enlightenment thinkers at this time are more or less assuming that humans are perfectible, that they can be good, and that you should have a government by the educated elite. And certainly you don't need all the separation of powers, checks and balances stuff, because it would just get in the way of the elites doing what's right.
Okay, how about a comment on the founders and deism?
One of the things I do in my book, as you know, is I set it up with something like each chapter with 18 or so quotations. And you can find scholar after scholar that says things like most of America's founders were deists, or at least many of America's founders were deists. Now, deism, of course, refers to an 18th century approach to Christianity that basically says God has created the universe and he steps away from it. He certainly doesn't intervene in human affairs. God doesn't do miracles. Deists usually reject things like the incarnation, the atonement, and things of this nature. So it's a form of Christianity, but a very watered down form of Christianity. And what I do is I look at the evidence for this. Book after book that makes this claim looks only at six or seven founders. And so I look at those founders fairly carefully and show that really, with the exception of Ethan Allen and Tom Paine, if we count Tom Paine as an American, none of America's founders are accurately called deists. Now, that's not the same thing as saying they're all Orthodox Christians. Someone like a Thomas Jefferson and a John Adams are not Orthodox Christians, but they seem to clearly embrace the idea that God intervenes in human affairs. And so I think it's very inaccurate to call them deists.
Okay, how about we've already addressed the issue of the godless Constitution. How about some comments about Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and the First Amendment?
Sure. The United States Supreme Court in Everson versus the Board of Education said that we must interpret the religion clause of the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. We must interpret this clause in light of the founders' views. Well, that is so far so good. But then both the majority opinion and the dissenting opinion go on to say that Thomas Jefferson and James Madison equals America's founders. Jefferson and Madison wanted the strict separation of church and state, or a wall of separation between church and state. Therefore, the Establishment Clause specifically requires a wall of separation between church and state. This is an utterly horrible historical argument. Just for fun, I show that even James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, when they held public office, certainly did not act as if there was a wall of separation between church and state. But if we turn from Jefferson and Madison, who did want a greater degree of separation than most of the founders, when we turn to the broader constellation of founders, and I'm not talking about local yokels out in the hills, I'm talking about the men at the First Federal Congress, the men in the Constitutional Convention, the men in the ratifying conventions, and I say men because they all were men in this era that were serving in these ways. There's just no evidence that this broader constellation of founders desired anything like the strict separation of church and state. They thought that state and state governments could promote and protect religion in a variety of ways, and even the national government could do so as well.
Well, and I think, just to hone in on James Madison for a moment, James Madison was taught very well by the Reverend John Witherspoon, who was the president of Princeton. And there are a lot of statements Madison makes along the lines of, you know, affirming his belief in Jesus. Some of his critics even said, man, he's more well-suited for the ministry than for politics. But Madison and Jefferson, they were both heroes to the evangelicals of the day, the nonconformists, the Baptists, for example, in Virginia, the people that wouldn't get licensed by the Church of England, you know, by law established there in Virginia, that kind of thing. So I'm not sure that Madison is this sort of, you know, secular guy wanting the, you know, and he issued days of fasting and prayer, you know, especially during the War of 1812 when the United States Capitol was being attacked, you know, the Washington, D.C. So I don't think Madison is the kind of the secular guy that the ACLU makes him out to be.
You know, I think that's exactly right. And I would separate out two questions. First of all, what was Madison's private interior Christian-like life? What was it like? And I would say that we do have to be careful. He was incredibly private about his religious beliefs. Now, there's no evidence whatsoever that he was a deist, but he's pretty silent with respect to his commitment to orthodoxy as well, or to piety. And so I'd be hesitant to speak very firmly about Madison's religious beliefs, one way or the other. I do think the ACLU types gets confused when they see that Madison did in fact oppose the Anglican Church being the established church of Virginia, or Patrick Henry's General Assessment Bill. Madison is very clear in his memorial and remonstrance that established religion is bad because it hurts Christianity. And he goes on, and later in life he says, it was a wonderful thing that we got rid of this establishment because it caused Christianity to flourish. And this is exactly what the evangelicals argued in their own petitions, which were incidentally far more, and they were signed by far more people than signed Madison's more famous moral remonstrance. And you're exactly right. Madison voted to pay the Confederation Congress chaplains. He served on the committee to select chaplains for the new First Federal Congress. When president of the United States, he did in fact issue 4 calls for prayer and fasting. Now he did, once he left office, he penned some reflections. And in these reflections, he said, well, maybe it's inappropriate to have congressional chaplains, and maybe president shouldn't issue calls for prayer and fasting. And so what people who want the strict separation of church and state do is they focus in on this one document, which was a private document. No one really knew about it until really the mid-20th century. But they focus in on this one document to say this is Madison's true commitments. And let's stipulate for a moment, perhaps they are his true commitments. I don't think they are. But even if they were, why does it matter? If we're going to interpret the First Amendment in light of how it was originally understood, we have to go well beyond what was in the interior of Madison's mind to look at the broader constellation of founders. And when we do that, we see there's no evidence whatsoever that they wanted a wall of separation between church and state.
How about a comment or two? Well, actually, you can make several comments, if you would, on some of the less famous founding fathers. Roger Sherman of Connecticut.
Oh, thank you for asking me. And as you know, I have a book dedicated to Roger Sherman. It's more of an academic book, but it's still accessible. So Robert Sherman is clearly a deep and pious Calvinist. He went to the church pastored by Jonathan Edwards Jr., and it was only his support that kept Jonathan Edwards Jr. in that church. He wrote sermons. He argued from the Bible and the Confederation Congress to support certain ends. He's probably the most important founder most people don't know much about. He served on the five-person committee that drafted the Declaration of Independence. He was a central player in the Constitutional Convention. When he and Madison differed, he won more than he lost. He went on to serve in the first federal Congress, where the only handwritten draft of the Bill of Rights we have is in his hand. He was on the committee that basically put together the draft Bill of Rights. There's no way in the world that Sherman supported anything like the strict separation of church and state. Like the folks in Virginia, he was coming to question whether or not Connecticut should have an established church, believing that it hurt Christianity. But that doesn't mean that the state or national governments couldn't support religion in a variety of other ways. Certainly things like a call for prayer and fasting. In the first federal Congress, Elias Boudinot made a suggestion. He said, maybe we should ask George Washington to issue a Thanksgiving Day proclamation. Adonais Burke of South Carolina said, no, we can't do that. Sherman stood up in Congress and made a biblical argument that Thanksgiving Day proclamations are biblical and appropriate, and that it's entirely appropriate for Congress to ask George Washington to issue such a proclamation. The House agreed with Roger Sherman. The Senate agreed with the House. And George Washington issued this wonderfully theologically rich proclamation in 1789, which, if your listeners haven't read it, I encourage them just to go and Google it. They'll be blown away. Presidents still issue Thanksgiving Day proclamations, but they tend to be fairly bland. This is not bland at all. It's an overtly Christian encouragement to thank God. There's no compulsion involved, right? No one is forced to do something with respect to religion, but this doesn't mean the government can't encourage it.
Alexander Hamilton.
Hamilton is, again, an interesting founder, very, very pious as a young lad. In the middle of his career, he famously, as everyone knows now because of the play, he had an extramarital affair. And so those who would classify him as a deist will point to something like that and say, oh, look at this. Hamilton had an extramarital affair. Good Christians don't have extramarital affairs. Therefore, he's a deist. That logic makes no sense whatsoever, right? To begin with, let me point out that the test of being a Christian is moral perfection, then none of us are Christians, right? We all fall short in various ways. Now, falling short by having an extramarital affair is a particularly grievous way of falling short, but it doesn't make one a deist. Hamilton then, towards the end of his life, clearly has a conversion experience, and he forswears some of the things he had done before. And he returned to the church, I think it's fair to say. Now, that's not to say he wasn't pious, that he wasn't influenced by Christianity. There is no document whatsoever of which I'm aware where he rejects any basic tenet of Orthodox Christianity. And so it's hard to chat exactly where he's at spiritually. But again, I think we can point to a number of ways in which he was influenced by Christianity as he helped break America from Great Britain and create the new nation.
John Jay.
One of my favorite founders. He's great. Of course, one of the first Supreme Court justices, Chief Justice, I should say, governor of New York, a author of some of the Federalist Papers, a pious, pious Anglican. He was profoundly concerned with things like slavery. He brought his faith into the public square to argue against slavery. He tried when he was helping to put together the New York Constitution. He tried to get a provision of the New York Constitution that would ban slavery. He was unsuccessful at that time. But later, as governor, right around 1798, I think, he signed a law that put slavery on the road to extinction in New York. So a fine, fine example of a Christian statesman.
Wow, we're basically out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, the name of your book is Did America Have a Christian Founding? The subtitle is Separating Modern Myth from Historical Truth. It's Thomas Nelson Publishers. Is there a website for the book or for you, your writings and so forth?
There is, markdavidhall.org.
Perfect, markdavidhall.org. Okay, thank you so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Appreciate it.